go ahead. Let's finish up. A couple minutes left of joints. Gout is a very common joint disease. Does anybody know anybody in their family who has gout? Okay. All right. So when we talk about gout, we have to think of biochemistry. And this one, this is a metabolic joint disease. So something's accumulating, some metabolite. So when you talk about the de novo pathway to making nucleic acids, the G and A nucleic acids, there's a breakdown of guanine and adenine to xanthine to uric acid. So there's a problem of too much degradation of these particular nucleic acids, purines, to give you rise to uric acid. So one of the things that exacerbates gout is somebody who eats red meat. You'll hear that. And the reason is, you know that skeletal muscle is what? It has a lot of nucleic acids in it because it has it's a muscle fiber has multiple nuclei. There's a source of nucleic acids. Another important source you always have to remember of nucleic acids, since it's red, why is it red meat versus pale or white meat, is that what makes it red is a lot of mitochondria. The mitochondria have mitochondrial DNA. They have 33 genes in the mitochondrial DNA that's important for the enzymes that are critical for the Krebs cycle, TCA cycle, and beta oxidation of free fatty acids. So now you have two sources of nucleic acids in red meat. One, from all those nuclei of the muscle fiber itself, and then all the mitochondria that are increased compared to white fibers. You think of, these are type 1 fibers, you have a lot of mitochondria and you have a lot of mitochondrial DNA. And so that's what exacerbates. So if you have so much nucleic acid, you're trying to break it down, you're going to break it down and produce more uric acids, and now it can get in your joints, it can get in your soft tissues. So what causes the pain? Why do you get an arthritis? Well, what happens is, think of the uric acid crystals like glass. That's how you have to think of it in a metaphoric way. Now, who's going to eat that foreign material? Our neutrophils. But think of, like, if you were to eat glass, what would happen to your oral cavity if you were chomping on glass? What would happen to your mouth? You'd bleed. You'd get chopped up. That's the same thing when it gets phagocytized by the neutrophils, that the neutrophils will release the lytic enzymes that we've seen over and over again, collagenase, elastase, all these proteases, and now these lysosomal enzymes will now break down your tissue, cause tissue inflammation, neutrophils come in, and now you get a gouty foot. It's very painful. You have all the cardinal signs of inflammation. So the macrophages, they're going to come in too. This is a chronic disease. They'll try to eat it, and they release lytic enzymes and cytokines. They can release and give you an inflamed joint as well. So the way you remember gout is, if the patient is complaining of gout, it's because what are their inflammatory cells doing to the gouty crystals? They eat them, right, and now they're rupturing them like eating glass. That's how you have to think of it, and they're being phagocytized. And they're releasing all their enzymatic contents to the tissue and causing tissue injury. So one of the common places that one sees is the great toe or gouty podagra. Is one place you can see. You can see it in your hands as well, your feet.
Does diet change reverse gout?
What's that?
Can diet change reverse?
Yes. The question is, you want to find what's precipitating the underlying process. Is it a family problem in terms of metabolism, or your ability to break down, or the ability is accelerated versus not? And so you would then look at it in terms of dietary constraints that would help decrease the load of nucleic acids and their breakdown. This is what it looks like in the joint. It looks like a frosty day on the surface of the joint. It's quite different than we saw with rheumatoid arthritis, where it was that pannus or degenerative joint disease, where you saw the cartilage rubbed off, polished bone. Here you see this white crystalline material. It looks like white toothpaste, kind of gritty and crystalline. And you can see why when you have it in your joint space and inflammatory cells come in and try to eat it and then release the lytic enzymes, you get a very painful joint. Yes?
Why is it common at the table?
There's not a real good reason. If I were to think of why it would occur, well, one, it's further away, so it has less oxygenation. And so therefore, it gets deposited there, and you get an inflammatory process. There may be, in terms of the way that you're using a foot during the day, and it just causes some minor inflammation, and you get some crystals there. And when is it usually, when do you have the heaviest meal? Usually at what? At night. So if it has a lot of red meat, they usually end up waking up in the middle of the night. They'll tell you a classic history. My toe hurts like crazy. It's red and I can't step on it. And you can imagine it was what they were eating that night. Had a great impact on the amount of nucleic acids that they were ingesting. Yes. It can. That's the question, is that the alcohol itself, you have to look at studies, people just drinking alcohol versus they're drinking with meals. Some say red wine is worse than white wine to precipitate. The exact mechanism, it may be something to do with the injury to cells releasing the nucleic acids. It could be turnover. There could be a variety of reasons. It's hard to really understand what's going on. This is a neutrophil. You can see this is under polarized light. Here you see the gouty crystals. They have birefringence. And you can see the nuclei of the PMN, and then it's going to rupture in the phagolysosome and cause the release of lytic enzymes. Now, gouty crystals can be deposited in soft tissues. Ear is a common place where you can see it on the helix. The outside of the ear, should be nice and soft there. You can feel a little, like these little nodules of what are called tophi, and they're made of just uric acid crystals in the soft tissue. So if you just go around, everybody's feeling their ears, you're all fine. So you have all access to it. But that's not a normal ear. So the tophi could be in soft tissues around the joints or in places like this. In this case, the ear. Well, there's no joint, obviously. Here's what it looks like microscopically. You see these multinucleated giant cells. You get connective tissue response. And here you see all this uric acid crystals. At autopsy, I've seen at joints, people had these tophi. And you just make a small incision and you express all this white, looks like gritty toothpaste. That's just all this uric acid crystal being deposited in soft tissue. So you may see that or feel it, kind of soft, like toothpaste. Infectious arthritis. This is a disease where we talked about direct penetration from a wound, or you have somebody with infected bone, osteomyelitis that extends into the joint itself. Or hematologic spread like gonorrhea, as I mentioned before, is a common bacterium that can go to your joint and seed it. If you had somebody with infective endocarditis, those bacterial vegetation can break off and go to your joints and lead to septic joints as well. That is our topic of bone and joint disease. Any questions? Well, let's go from bones to kidney. In this case, So, have you started kidney and physiology yet?
No.
You're still on pulmonary?
Yes.
Okay. Kidneys are coming next. Where are your kidneys located in the human body? Where are your kidneys located? If I had to go look for them, where would you go find them? Where in the back? It's going to be in front of your 11th and 12th ribs. Which one's higher? Your left or right kidney relative to the other kidney? All right, you got only two choices.
The right.
Is higher or lower?
Higher.
No, it's lower. Your right, what organ is here, right underneath your diaphragm? Liver. The liver shoves the kidney on the right side down several centimeters. So the higher kidney is on your left. So they're out of alignment. So when you look at somebody walking behind their back, just think about they're a little tweaked because of that liver pushing it down. So when somebody complains of flank pain, lower flank pain, what organ do you always think of? Kidney. What's another tissue that can be cause pain is your erector spinae muscle. latissimus dorsi, coming across here. So that's sort of, so you have to distinguish the two. And it means a lot to distinguish between where that pain is coming from, the wall, or is it the kidney? Because they're both being innervated by the same nerves. So the kidney is made, basically, it has multiple functions. We're going to go through it in a very holistic way. So when you get to the renal physiology, you're going to go into more detail. But here's the kidney, and when we think of it, this is the inferior pole. Think of my hand. Like the kidney, we cut it in half. I bisect it. That's how the kidney will always be shown to you. Bisect it. So the superior pole, inferior pole. What organ sits on the superior pole right above it is your adrenal gland on each side. So what would be sitting there would be your adrenal glands right above it. You have the cortex here, and this is the medulla. And here's the tips of the papilla that are going into the minor calyces that will become the major urinary pelvis. Then it goes down your ureter, into your bladder, and then out your urethra. So we're moving in this direction. So here are the yellow fat, because where's the kidney sit? In the retroperitoneal space, and what are the kidneys sitting around? We all have fat around your kidneys. You may try to lose weight all you want, but you can't lose the weight, the fat around your kidneys. They're sitting on a cushion. When you're bouncing up and down doing exercise, they're in a pillow of fat. They're not flopping around like this inside. They can. And so basically, this fat from the retroperitoneal space is coming into the hilum. That's why it's yellow here, and here are the renal artery and vein and the renal pelvis coming out. Okay? Remember, the aorta and the inferior vena cava are going to be in the midline here. One of the things we do is take off the capsule so we can look at the surface where the glomeruli are for filtration. Okay? Now, when we think of the kidney, we have to break it down to four components. You have to think of this as well when you do the physiology. You have the glomeruli, where your blood, 10 to 15% of your cardiac output, goes to your kidneys to filter it. Then it's going to go through the glomerulus to the part of the nephron called the tubular elements. It's like it goes like an S, goes down to the cortex, to the medulla, through the cortex where the glomeruli are, goes down to the medulla, comes back out, and it goes back down again. It's like an S. Goes like this. Okay? So the glomerulus is where you see all these, it's about 25 capillary loops where blood has to be filtered. So we're going to look at diseases based on these four categories that one thinks of. So when we think of disease, we have to break it down to four components. The glomeruli, they're diseases that destroy the filtration apparatus of the kidney. Then the conduit that takes that filtrate through the tubular element, that S-type shape, that's tubular diseases. Then there's blood vessels and interstitium. That's a third component, and the other component that makes up the kidney, because it's highly vascularized, the blood vessels going in and leaving the kidney. So that's how you think of the kidney. We're going to go through each of these categories. Tubules, interstitium, and vasculature. That's how you think of the kidney. Okay? Now, this is a condition, this is a reverse way of flipping it. What makes up the functions of the kidney? Well, there's a condition called uremia. You'll hear this in patients. This means the kidney has failed in its ability to carry out functions of the kidney. So what is the definition of uremia? It's a syndrome of signs and symptoms that's a reflection of the kidney being damaged in some disease process, where its functional loss of renal tissue can't carry out these physiologic processes. That's how you're going to start out. Other terms you'll hear clinically is renal failure or insufficiency. These are synonymous terms. They can be acute onset or chronic. Which is worse to have? Well, chronic, because that means what? What type of tissues replace the kidney, if you say chronic? Scarring. And we know that's reversible or irreversible. That's right. So when you have any chronic process going on in an organ, it's not a good sign, is it? So what's the function of the kidney? One important thing is what electrolyte it has to regulate very tightly. The ion is sodium, and what's the one that, what follows sodium everywhere it's got to regulate? Water. That's one of the main functions of the kidney, is to keep balance of sodium and water in the body. Because wherever sodium goes, what follows it? water. That's what controls our blood pressure, is the amount of sodium we have, because that will dictate how much water comes in the intravascular process. Another important thing is azotemia means nitrogen. We have breakdown of molecules all the time, proteins. And so when you have damage to the glomerulus where you can't, or the kidney's destroyed, the tubular elements, then this can accumulate in the blood, and this is called the blood urea nitrogen. That's a reflection of that. What's a critical part of the kidney that's a function is to affect your pH. It makes what? What do you think it has to do? If you get acidosis, what can it make that controls your blood pH? It can't make anymore. Bicarbonate. The critical role of the kidney to affect metabolic acid base balance is making bicarbonate. So if you destroy the kidney, its ability to buffer it with bicarbonate is lost. So you lead to an acidosis. So what's the opposite of sodium that you have to control? Because sodium is high outside the cell, and inside the cell, what's high inside is potassium. So another important regulation of sodium is the regulation of potassium. So if the kidney is destroyed, you retain what? Potassium as well. And that can be dire consequences, especially leading to arrhythmias in your heart because of the action potential. And then what's another important function of the kidney is calcium and phosphate metabolism. You have vitamin D activation in the liver and the kidney. So your ability to get calcium from your gut is diminished because you can't hydroxylate vitamin D, you can't reabsorb it. Now, what bone disease can you now accelerate if somebody had kidney disease? Osteoporosis, that's right, because you couldn't make enough vitamin D, active vitamin D, therefore you're relying on what? Your bones to be your source of calcium as a consequence. So this becomes very important. So you can see this is a partial list. What's a hormone? It makes a number of hormones, but one of them is erythropoietin. So if you can't make erythropoietin from the kidneys and from the interstitial cells, what happens to the production of what cells go down? Red blood cells. So now you lead to anemia as a consequence, because you can't stimulate the bone to make red blood cells. It makes renin, that's important for controlling blood pressure. You'll learn about that. So the kidney has many functions, and you're going to learn about that in cell physiology, or in physiology. And so when you think of, when we talk about uremia, we've done what to the kidney? We've destroyed it. And its ability to carry out those functions lead to these imbalances. That's how you have to think about it in that way, okay? So what's the pathology? Well, because now you can't carry out all these critical processes, it's going to affect many tissues. So because of the material accumulating that's waste products, one of the important functions of the kidney is to get rid of that nitrogen compounds, it can irritate your skin and lead to a dermatitis as a reflection of these toxins. It can also affect, what happens if you retain sodium? You retain water. What happens to the intravascular volume? Goes up. What happens to your blood pressure? Goes up. So what happens to the left ventricular wall? You get concentric hypertrophy. Now you got to worry about heart disease, hypertensive heart disease. Then it can irritate the surface of the heart, leading to pericarditis, inflammation, just like the skin. It can also cause damage to your lungs because of the waste products. You get a uremic pneumonitis, or a chemical inflammation of your lungs. It can also irritate your gut, and especially your colon, and lead to uremic colitis, inflammation. And it can also affect the brain because these products are small enough, these waste products can now go across the blood-brain barrier and lead to an encephalitis, as well as affect the retina cells, the ganglionic cells in your retina, and lead to visual problems, as well as affect peripheral nerves, neuropathy, because of this. So when you have somebody in renal failure, it can have dire consequences. So the kidney plays a critical role in the physiology and biochemistry of other organs. In other words, can we live without our kidneys? No. Got to treat them well, like every organ. So let's go to glomerular diseases as an example. So the glomerulus is a three-dimensional sphere of 20 capillary loops in a what is called the glomerular space or Bowman space or urinary space. Around it, it has what is called Bowman's capsule that's around this collection of capillaries, which is lined by what are called these parietal epithelial cells. At the base of the glomerulus, and you see at the very top, you have what is called the afferent blood vessel, blood coming into it with the arrow you see on the left-hand side, then the efferent leaving it. And then it goes the vasa recta into the interstitium between the tubular elements. So this is the beginning where your blood is being filtered. So this is called the urinary space where the filtrate is going to go into. And you see that the proximal tubule, that's part of the nephron, is opposite to the base of the glomerulus where the blood vessel is coming in. So it's like the north and south pole. You see that? The north pole is where the blood vessel is coming in, goes through the loops, and then leaves. And then the opposite pole is where the filtrate now goes into the tubular element. And it's going to go winding up, going down through the cortex to the medulla, back out to the cortex, and then back down again through this process, like an S. So when we talk about the glomerulus, there's three cells that reside in the glomerulus that are important. We're going to go through their functions. This will make it easier when you think of when you get to the renal physiology. Here you see what are called podocytes. What does podo mean? Foot. So these are cells. Think of each of my hands as a podocyte. And then my palm is the body of the cell with the nucleus and the organelles. And think of my fingers as the filipodia or foot processes. When two podocytes are on the surface of the glomerular basement membrane, they interdigitate just like this, like my fingers. Think of my basement membrane as my shirt. So if you were to go on Google Images and put down scanning electron micrograph of podocytes of the glomerulus, this is exactly what they look like without the hairs. This is what I call the foot processes. They said my white shirt is the basement membrane. What's the function of these cells? They control that basement membrane. That's the molecular sieve. It controls its charge, which is negative. Your protein albumin we talked about is negative. That's why you never see what your urine is protein. Unless you do what? You can damage that cell in a glomerular disease and you get increased permeability. You've changed the molecular sieve, which is the basement membrane here in red. So the cell that controls the chemical nature and structure of the basement membrane is the podocyte. So any disease that damages the podocyte will now damage the basement membrane and now it makes it leakier. So proteins that you normally like albumin get through, and if it's so bad that you damage that basement membrane, then even inflammatory cells or red blood cells get into your urine. Is it normal to have blood in your urine, by the way? Never. Anytime you see blood in the urine, you have to think, is it occurring in the kidney, in your ureter? Is it going down from your bladder or your urethra? So it's important to know where the blood is coming from. And you're going to detect that, and I'll explain that in a moment. That's the first space here, is the urinary space, is the podocyte sitting on the glomerulus controlling the base membrane. Here we have the capillary lumen. What cell resides in the capillary lumen throughout the cardiovascular system are endothelial cells. These endothelial cells are very specialized cells. They form holes or fenestrations to allow, if I'm blood pressure and I'm pushing through, I'm going right through that basement membrane in between the slit processes. The podocytes can never touch one another because there are what are called nephron molecules. These are transmembrane proteins that keep the podocyte foot processes separated. So when you damage the podocyte, you lose these molecules, and now they touch one another. And that's when they become damaged, and it becomes leaky. So the reason why there's a space there, which you can't see here, is a molecule called the nephron that's coming across and separating. This is called the slit diaphragm, and these are the fenestrations. So when you're putting blood pressure, this is how the filtration goes throughout, right between those spaces. And that's why it's leaky. In complete contrast to the blood-brain barrier, where you're going to have those three structures, the endothelial cells, the foot processes, the astrocytes, and the basement membrane, it's going to limit what gets out. So the blood-brain barrier is the opposite of the what is called the glomerular capillary wall made of the podocyte, basement membrane, and the endothelial cell. three structures. That's called the glomerular capillary wall. The next cell that's critical to the glomerulus that provides many functions, we'll talk about four, is the mesangial cell. It's a connective tissue cell. And what it provides in the dark green is mesangial matrix molecules, where the basement membrane, when it's not attached to an endothelial cell, you can see is attached to it, so it gives structural support. It's like a macrophage. It can release cytokines that can stimulate other cells in the glomerulus or in the blood to be attracted. So it releases cytokines. It's phagocytic like a macrophage or neutrophil, but it also has contractility properties. In other words, if this cell contracts, this could affect the capillaries in terms of blood flow. So it's a way of controlling blood flow through the glomerulus and filtration. So the four functions of the mesangial cell is structural support, cytokine secretion, it's going to provide phagocytic activity like a macrophage, and then going to have contractility properties. Okay? So there's three cells that reside in glomerulus. Two are associated with the space. The first on the outside is the podocyte that controls basement membrane. Then we have the endothelial cells and the capillary loops that are fenestrated, facilitate filtration. And the last is the mesangial cell. This is an electron micrograph. And don't worry, I'm not going to give you a picture like this on your exam. Here's the urinary space. Here is a podocyte. You see the foot processes attaching to the basement membrane. This dark line is the normal densa lamina that's created by the podocyte that controls it. Here is a red blood cell in the lumen. And here you see the gaps between the cytoplasm and the endothelial cell? And so filtration is going right through here between those gaps. That's how you think of it structurally. So anything that damages that wall, that glomerular capillary wall, what happens to it becomes leaky. Or you completely destroy it, it can't filter at all. So this is what the glomerular capillary wall looks like. Here's the capillary lumen. Here's the cytoplasm endothelial cell. Here's the basement membrane. And here is the foot process, the podocyte. You can't see it, but there are these nephrine molecules that are giving the slit diaphragm. So when blood is filtered, it goes straight through here. Going from the capillary lumen, fenestration, through the slit diaphragm. So this is the structural integrity that we take for granted all the time. So here's a diagram to illustrate the molecules called nephrin that separates. It's an anchoring protein, as you can see, that provides the slit diaphragm. Here is that basement membrane. And what cell maintains the structural integrity of the basement membrane? The podocyte. There it is. There's another molecule inside called podocin. You don't have to worry about that. And then the endothelial cells and fenestration. So you can see how filtration goes just like that into the urinary space. So let's talk about glomerular diseases. There are two categories that affect glomerular diseases. One is called inflammatory. The other one is going to be degenerative, involving primarily the podocyte. So we call this nephritic syndrome. And so these are inflammatory conditions. I'm just going to give a couple examples to illustrate this, where what happens is when you think of a syndrome, there's a unique signs and symptoms that characterize this particular entity. Because a syndrome means you have multiple etiologies, but you have the same clinical presentation. So that means that the only way you can make a diagnosis of somebody with nephritic syndrome is a renal biopsy to decide what type of disease is leading to the same clinical manifestations. So what happens? Let's just think logically. If I have an inflammatory process damaging the glomerular wall and I decrease filtration, what happens to the volume of your blood, water and sodium? Goes up. So what are you going to develop clinically? That's a reflection of that. Mild to moderate hypertension. Okay, depending upon how severe, how many glomeruli are being destroyed in this disease process. So what's going to leak out, because of damage the podocyte in this process as well, I'm going to leak out what in the urine that you normally should not see there? Proteins. So you get proteinuria. If the damage is so severe that I cannot not only get molecules like proteins released, but I also get blood in your urine, it means it's what? It's highly destructive, isn't it? Because red blood cells should not be found in urine. So that means there's big holes or damage in that glomerular tuft that's allowing red blood cells to go into the tubular elements of the nephron and lead to what are called red blood cell casts. If you ever see somebody's urine analysis and they look microscopically, because the blood has now gone into the lumen of these tubules that make up the nephron, they can now be peed out as a column or a stack of red blood cells called a red blood cell cast. If you have a damage outside the kidney, in your ureter, renal pelvis, or bladder, you won't see it because it's past the kidney. So when they say there's hematuria, you want to know, is the blood somewhere else in the urinary tract or is it coming from the kidney? And that makes a big difference in how you determine where the blood is coming from. Next thing is the BUN, the blood urea nitrogen accumulates, azotemia, as well as the creatinine. And then last but not least, if I destroy the glomerulus, what happens to urinary output? If I destroy the glomerulus, what happens to filtration? Goes down, what happens to urinary output? Goes down too. If you can't filter, it's got to go down. Input versus output. So what do we call this? What does anuria mean? No pee, no urine. Oligo, what does oligo mean? A little urine. Chiquito. Okay? A little urine. Do you make urine 24 hours a day? Yes, even when you're asleep, because the first thing you do in the morning is do what? That's right. Especially if you drank a lot of coffee the night before, you'll pee even longer. Okay? Right, you're making urine all the time. You're constantly you're filtering your blood when you're asleep. It's amazing. So when we cause damage to the glomerular capillary wall, we can do it by immunocomplexes for nephritic. They can go into the basement membrane of the glomerular capillary wall. They can be under subepithelial or subendothelial or subepithelial. It varies depending on what's going on and what the disease is. So I'm going to give you an example. Just some examples to illustrate this process. This is Goodpasture syndrome. It's a hypersensory reaction type 2 where an antibody is going to a particular epitope on collagen type 4. So here's a disease process. There's an antigenic site on collagen type 4 that you make these antibodies that now activate complement. Inflammatory cells come in, destroy the glomerulus, and now you get a nephritic syndrome. This is called anti-glomerular basement membrane. And here is immunofluorescence showing the IgG bound to that antigen on the collagen type 4 molecule. What other organ has a lot of basement membrane like the kidney that would also be damaged? What organ has a lot of basement membrane in it that we've already studied and you're studying right now? The lungs, very good. So those antibodies could go to the lungs, cause damage there, and you'd be coughing up blood. You get a immunologic or pneumonia or inflammation because of the damage to it. So that's one example. Now we come to what is your destruction, primarily the podocyte. We call this nephrotic with an O. Remember the first one was with what? An I for inflammatory. So nephrotic means that there's some problem that you've increased permeability. You've affected the molecular sieve of the basement membrane. And what's the most common protein found in your urine is albumin. So what are you going to see a lot of in your urine? Albumin, because its charge is negative. You lost the charge because that negative negative will repel it normally in you and I. And so there's a loss of albumin. What cell makes albumin? Our hepatocytes in your liver. So what the liver going to do is when they see there's a lack of albumin circulating in the blood, they'll increase the synthetic activity of the hepatocyte, but also make more lipids. So then you get hypercholesterolemia as a secondary consequence of the hepatocyte being stimulated to make synthetically more molecules, including albumin and lipid. And this leads to hyperlipidemia. And is it normal to have fat floating in your urine? No. So we call that lipiduria. You actually can see it. What food do I think of when I think of that is oil and vinegar. When you look at oil and vinegar, shake it, you see it when it's got those fat, the oil going to the surface. That's what it would look like. So this is massive proteinuria, where you're losing grams of protein 3.5 grams or greater in 24 hours. They collect your urine for 24 hours, and they measure the amount of protein that is accumulating. So you and I, if you were collected urine, how much protein would I expect to see in your urine? None, exactly. So this is gram amounts, means there's really leaky glomerular walls. Then you're going to have less protein in your blood, albumin, so it's going to be less than 3 grams per deciliter. Then you're going to have increased cholesterol. Usually it's typically above 300 milligrams per deciliter. What's the normal level of cholesterol in the blood? Is less than 100. So this is increased. Then what are you going to see in your urine? Lipid. Now, because I've decreased albumin, what happens to colloidal oncotic pressure? Goes down. So what does the patient get around their body? Edema. And what do we call that clinically when you have systemic edema in all your tissues? Anasarca. Very good. The A word. Okay? And that's what you see. Is this different than nephritic? Would these patients get hypertension? Do you have a nephrotic? Would you expect to see hypertension? Yay or nay? No, because what are we not retaining? We're not retaining volume, are we? We're losing it because we're losing protein and sodium as well. So you're not going to see hypertension. Will you see blood in the urine in these patients? No, because what is it affecting? The molecular sieve. So you're going to see molecules getting into there, not cells like in nephritic. Now, what are some examples of this? There's a condition called minimal change disease. It's the most common cause of nephrotic syndrome in children. Usually they get a viral illness and they get damage to their podocyte and they lose these foot processes because they have been damaged and the base membrane becomes less negative and structurally altered. And you can see there's not a dense lamina here and you don't see any space. And it becomes, even though there's no space, it's very leaky and loses massive amount of protein and you lead to the hyperlipidemic state. So this is called minimal change, because the only change you see is on a renal biopsy showing you the loss of the space between the foot processes. What's going to be one of the most common causes of nephrotic syndrome you're going to see clinically is diabetes. Diabetics, about 40% of patients who have diabetes mellitus will develop chronic renal disease. And so the basement membrane, when you think of in diabetes, it affects all cells in the intravascular space because the endothelial cells are exposed to that high glucose. And that high glucose is going to cause damage to the basement membranes and affect the podocytes that affect the basement membranes. And the basement membranes become thicker, but they're structurally abnormal. They're weaker and leaky. And so when you think of the consequence of diabetes, it's a vascular problem that causes the high morbidity and mortality. And here's what the lesions look like in those that are the 40% are affected. You get all these mesangial cells proliferating, producing all this mesangial matrix. You can get capillary aneurysms because the basement membrane is so structurally abnormal, and they get a nephrotic syndrome, I should say. Nephrotic with an O. Okay. Diabetes is the most common cause of chronic renal failure in the United States. So that's, if you have a patient with chronic renal failure, this is probably the most common one that's going to you'll see because of the damage that it causes to the kidney. So when we talk about nephritic or nephrotic syndromes by these various type of conditions, you don't have to memorize this, but now I come to chronic glomerulonephritis, the end stage lesion. So when I say chronic, what tissue has now replaced the glomerulus? Scarring. Is it reversible or irreversible? Irreversible. Now, what's the only two choices the patient has? If you got to have kidneys, how do you treat these patients? Transplant or? No, you don't remove it. Dialysis. You have to have artificial kidneys or you get a new kidney. By the way, where do they put your new kidney in your body? If you get a kidney transplant, where do they put the new kidney? Where would you put it? Think logically. You've gone through anatomy. Where would you put a new kidney? Huh?
Where kidneys belong.
Not in this case, because you leave the original kidneys there. So where do you put it? Where's the new kidney go? Huh? Where? By the bladder. You're close. Where's it? When you put a book on a bookshelf, you find a shelf. Where's the shelf in the pelvis? Is your iliopsoas fossa in your pelvis. So they put the kidney, they open up the wall on the right or left side, they slip the kidney underneath the peritoneum, and then they hook up the ureter directly, put it right to the bladder, and then they put the blood vessels, the anastomose, the renal artery and renal vein, to the iliac vessels in your pelvis. And so you're walking around with your kidney on the left or right, on your hip. You're wearing your new kidney on your hip, literally. So you're walking around two non-functional kidneys and then a pelvic kidney. When you see a patient, you do a physical exam, you see a scar down here, that's where the kidney has been placed. Yes. Yes. Because it's easy. You don't, because they're all scarred down. What do you do with scar tissue? It's non-functional. If you go in there, where is it located? In the retroperitoneal space. What's the likelihood of complications like infections and wound healing with problems? High or low? That's why. Makes sense, right? Huh? No, because the kidneys are sclerotic. If the glomeruli are destroyed, how's it going to filter blood? Can it? So where are you going to be filtered? So what do you think happens to the size of the transplanted kidney? It gets bigger. It has to, because it's now taking the role of how many kidneys? Two. So you get hypertrophy of your kidney in the new transplant. It's bigger. It's got to. It adapts. What are the two choices? Either adapt or? There you go. Sounds like surviving school, doesn't it? Either adapt or die. Okay? All right, this is what told us this was a glomerulus? It's what shape? Oval. But what is it replaced with? Scar tissue. This is why it's non-functional. This could be due to diabetes, good pastures, any of the things that I talked about. Either it's nephritic or nephrotic. This is the end stage lesion, is sclerosis of the glomerulus or scarring as a consequence. Okay? All right, moving now to the second category, tubular interstitial diseases. Now, this is a very common condition that can occur, and this is because the nephron, to carry out all those processes of affecting sodium, potassium, calcium, acid base, all these processes, absorption, excretion, these are very what? Energy-dependent states. So what organelle do you think those tubular cells have a lot of? Mitochondria. So what form of cell injury is the kidney most susceptible to if it has a lot of mitochondria in those tubular epithelial cells? Hypoxia, the H word. So any cause of shock, nachos, what's the kidney going to be? It can be affected because you get acute ischemia. Because of low perfusion of the kidney, the tubular epithelial cells can die. It goes by different names. We call it, pathologists, acute tubular necrosis. Obviously, the tissue is necrotic. Acute renal failure, vasoreactive, or what they call today, the clinicians will call this acute renal injury, is the term. So when you hear the term acute renal injury, it means that the cells lining the nephron, the tubular epithelial cells, have died. What's the most common cause? Decreased blood pressure to the kidney. And the kidney is going to really wants to regulate blood pressure, because to avoid its own damage through hypoxic injury, but also the rest of the body. So let's say if the kidney saw low blood pressure, what ion would it keep? Sodium, because what follows sodium? Water. That's exactly what the kidney will do to preserve perfusion to avoid hypoxia. This is very important. The kidney, you'll see, is critical to this. What are things that can go to the kidney, can cause damage to the tubular epithelial cells? Where it gets reabsorbed, 80% of the filtrate from the glomerulus and the tubules is in the proximal tubules that have a lot of mitochondria. So if you have mercury poisoning, carbon tetrachloride poisoning, uranium, if you have diethylene glycol, people try to commit suicide by drinking antifreeze, by the way. That's what's in antifreeze. And they can die of acute renal failure because of the damage of this being accumulated. Other drugs or other molecules that can cause it, antibiotics are well known. Gentamicin, kanamycin, amphotericin B, antifungal medicine can cause damage. Because if you get drugs in the blood, what organ's got to filter those blood? The kidney. And so that's why drugs can cause damage to your kidneys as a consequence to this process. So here's the nephron. And here's the glomerulus and the cortex. And it goes, you can see it's coming down. There is that first bend of the S, and then comes back up as the distal convoluted tubules, and then the collecting ducts, and then out to the urine. So it's like an S. Goes up and around. It can go on either side, too, depending on the diagram. In the toxic form, where is your filtration get reabsorbed? 80% of your filtrate occurs in the proximal tubule cells. So if I am a drug, where would I cause the damage? Where I get reabsorbed. And so the reabsorption is the proximal tubule, and that's why you see the greatest amount of damage in red there when you have some type of drug or toxin that gets reabsorbed. That's where the damage occurs primarily. In the ischemic form, because you have autoregulation of blood supply in the cortex and the medulla, here you get patchy areas of necrosis to those cells. Or it could be the whole nephron as well. So basically, it leads to decreased outflow of urine, so you get oliguria, anuria, and it can lead to uremia because you've damaged the function of the kidney by damaging those tubular epithelial cells. Death can occur or full recovery because those tubular epithelial cells are stable cells. They can regenerate and reconstitute the epithelium of the nephron. And the mechanism for the anuria, you can get failure of glomerular filtration, you get vasoconstriction, decreasing blood supply, but also what happens if the dead cells die, what are they going to slough off into? The lumen. So what happens to the lumen? It gets obstructed by all these dead cells and preventing urine to getting out as a consequence. This is what it looks like clinically or pathologically. You see there's no nuclei here. They're all starting to disappear here, and the tubular epithelial cells are sloughing off. You can see that the filtrate can't get through there, and the tubules dilate because the structural integrity has been destroyed. Here you see somebody that's healing. Here you see a mitotic figure showing you that these cells are stable cells that help to regenerate the nephron. You can get allergic reactions because there's antibiotics. Like, we get allergic reactions in the other organ systems, like the skin, for example. You can also get an allergic response within the interstitium. And this is typically associated with an antibiotic like methicillin. And you get, it's a hypersensory reaction type 1, where you're making IgE antibodies bound to mast cells in the kidney and release this basically eosinophils come in. Eosinophilic chemotactor. So you think of drugs that are antibiotics can cause interstitial allergic inflammation in the kidney itself because it's trying to filter it and concentrate it. Okay? Acute and chronic pyelonephritis. Let's see what time it is. We'll stop at this point. This podcast was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.